Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vauquette. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. This morning, we start off in the presence of a Connecticut legacy. As we visit Bridgeport's Barnum Museum, we're going to recap all that's happened with this irreplaceable facility and so many of its contents since the museum was struck by a rare urban tornado several years ago. And we're going to learn how the museum's leadership and staff have inspired a global community of experts to help restore this Connecticut treasure and all its magical contents and transform the Barnum Museum into a 21st century destination like you've never seen before. Then we'll present the first of a two-part series of interviews gathered recently at the Wilton Go Green Zero Waste Fair. We're going to chat with one of the organizers of this event, meet an exhibitor who will explain the ins and outs of fabric recycling, and then we're going to meet a chef who's going to help you appreciate and turn a lot of the food scraps you've been throwing away into a whole new and delectable culinary experience. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vauquette, right after this reminder. Griffin Hospital's health initiative for men called HIM will be giving out free game passes and chances to win gift cards to men who take part in free screenings at its Men's Health Day, Saturday, June 22nd, from noon to 4 at the Sports Center of Connecticut on River Road in Shelton, just off the parkway. Held in recognition of Men's Health Month, the event will feature a series of health information tables and free health screenings, body mass index, blood pressure, cholesterol, and blood sugar. For each station completed, attendees can earn a free $10 gift card from the Sports Center, which can be used at most of the center's attractions, like the driving range, mini golf, and batting cages. They'll also be drawings throughout the day for additional gift cards. For more information about HIM, visit griffinhealth.org/HIM.
You can't help laughing and smiling when you walk into the Barnum Museum here in Bridgeport, even though it is a reestablished work in progress, and I think P.T. Barnum would have been proud. We're here within this incredible building in Bridgeport. This is the last surviving building attributed to the American visionary, entrepreneur, and entertainer Phineas Taylor Barnum. His birthday is coming up, what would have been his 209th birthday on July 5th. And there's lots to talk about with Kathy Marr over the next 15 minutes or so to both remind you of this treasure, not just a treasure for Bridgeport, but a global treasure, and all of the global treasures that are within it that will be unveiled once again. Kathy, thanks for having us in.
Oh, thank you so much. I love having you come.
So I guess the new book on the Barnum Museum sort of started with tragedy, as we have talked about a number of times on the program before, because we have been able to and been invited to check in with you since the most unwelcome visitor in the form of a meteorological event walked through the front door and front windows and every nook and cranny of the front of the Barnum Museum. Remind us about that urban tornado experience.
Oh, it's always such a delightful journey back in time. Yes, so on June 24th in 2010, an anomalous EF1 tornado hit downtown Bridgeport. Of course, nobody knew what the heck happened. It was so unusual for everybody that was literally in the midst of it. And come to find out that, in fact, it was a tornado with over 110-mile-an-hour winds. And even though the historic Barnum Museum stood strong, the structural integrity of the building was devastated. And there, before the grace of God, it did collapse, which is quite true. And we've done a lot to keep it, you know, standing and getting it healthy little by little. If the 2010 tornado wasn't enough. The following year, if everybody remembers, it was Hurricane Irene. So panic ensued, and we had to shore things up temporarily. And we had, you know, more wind, you know, the forensic reports start piling on. And then 12 was Superstorm Sandy. So it was really the trifecta of storms. And let's not forget all the record snow that we had. I was literally on the flat roof of the building, I don't remember what year it was, with a couple of city guys. The city sent a few fellows over, and we were shoveling the roof of the 4 feet of snow because it wasn't completely shored up yet. So I've just been a disaster manager mitigator for all of these years. But fortunately, we're shifting out of that epic in the history of the museum and my life into the re-envisioning. And that is refreshing and exciting. So
And literally starting hours after that tornado passed, you started discovering or rediscovering the fact that the Barnum Museum and P.T. Barnum had a lot of expert friends all over the globe that were willing to converge on Bridgeport, not just for hours and days, but for weeks and now years post-incidents to lend their, really their expertise as being among the most skilled restoration experts on the planet.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't know my background. I've got a master's degree, and part of that degree is conservation. I worked in a conservation laboratory, so I don't necessarily consider myself a conservator, but it wasn't hours after the tornado. It was immediately, because the glass was all over everything. The water came pouring in, something that totally went over a lot of the insurance adjusters' heads is hygroscopic shock, this massive moisture. So every single artifact was impacted, and I knew that right away. And we started mobilizing conservators and curators to get here because everything was so fully and completely contaminated because it was a massive puffback, the entire HVAC system. So the level of knowledge, fortunately, you never know this, you know, in your, I always refer to my arrogant youth, why you have those tools. And it was fortunate that I was here and I was able to mobilize and contact, you know, having, I can't tell anybody, whatever business, you know, or even your home, know your contact information. Who do you call first? It's that line of defense that is most critical in any emergency. And I was considered ready. I was considered prepared by the American Institute of Conservators. I had flown out to disaster readiness programs. I wrote the Barnum Museum's emergency manual. And everything is in there, you know, from hurricanes, of course, is in there. I was like, biohazard waste is in there. Alien invasions, everything. Sure. And tornado was in there.
It is the Barnum Museum.
It's the Barnum Museum, after all. You know, but the first words for the tornado preparation is like, when you get the warning.
Yeah.
And we had no warning.
Right.
It rendered that document fully useless. Yeah. And I've traveled around the country speaking on lessons learned, readiness. You know, so it's every situation is different, and I've been called, you know, by many colleague institutions actually around the country, including Colorado. Colorado actually took one of my programs and built it into their readiness program.
Right, right.
So, yeah, you just never know what your obituary is going to look like.
Right, right. Well, since then, and most recently, you know, you have received lots of personal and regional and national recognition, both directly and publicly. But most recently, you were the recipient of a great honor here in the state.
Yeah, that's very kind of you. Department of Economic Community Development, Office of Tourism acknowledged every year they acknowledge a tourism leader of the year, and apparently I was nominated and won. To my surprise, when they called me to tell me about this, I thought they were asking me to nominate somebody, so I'm already jumping to like Greg Dancho with the people that I know who are champions in the community, and they were like, no, do you understand what we're telling you? And I was like, what? You know, so that was quite humbling, because I'm like, I'm still working. I still have to get this. And they were like, just being a champion and a voice and keeping the momentum of Barnum moving through the state and beyond, it has been, you know, you conquering it. But
it's almost like, why don't you give it to somebody else? Because I'm not done yet.
Oh my gosh, that's exactly right. It's like I got to. So now the award is a beacon, more of a beacon for me to keep going, keep that momentum, you know, alive and strong and powerful so we can get it done. But I said this even, they created a beautiful video, and I have to give a shout out to Congressman Jim Himes, who has been a remarkable champion of the Barnum Museum and this community. But I am blessed to stand on the shoulders of so many talented and committed people. You know, people on the board, the volunteers, the vision team that we've assembled. And it's not just me. It is not just me. An award like this comes, you know, with the incredible dedication and in our case, a lot of sacrifice by just dozens and dozens of people. And I'm so grateful to all of them. And that's that. Acknowledgement just inspires me onward.
Great. Folks, if you're just joining us, we're chatting with Kathy Marr here at the Barnum Museum in downtown Bridgeport. If you drive through Bridgeport on Interstate 95 and glance over and see this baked kind of reddish brown building with the big round structure on the top, yes, that's the Barnum Museum. You just jump off the highway if you'd like to get a better look at it. The museum is really the leading authority on P.T. Barnum's life and work. They have more than 60,000 artifacts, many now meticulously restored, as we heard. And they are listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Kathy Marr has been great to invite us in and join us on the program all these many years, particularly since the tornado damage that we just talked about really fundamentally changed the whole operation here. So July 5th would be P.T. Barnum's 209th birthday. There's a lot of exciting things going on, probably one of the most evident of which for devotees of the museum and total strangers driving by on Interstate 95 will be huge amount of scaffolding going up shortly.
We've been you know, really shoring up the building in phases as we raise money. We're identifying the most critical areas and moving around. So thanks to the Bridgeport delegation up in Hartford, and so many of our regional legislators supported a $6.9 million appropriation to help fix the building. And equally, we're so grateful that Avangrid actually donated an additional $50,000 to help us move forward with an illumination program as well. But what we're going to be doing with the construction is the team of historic preservation architects, engineers, our program designers, our interpretive master plan designers, everybody is at the table working together, because we have to create a vibrant 21st century museum experience. So all of these minds have to be working simultaneously, so we're not roughing anything in later on. So we're starting to, we have to scaffold the building, because all of the exterior decorative terracotta elements, a lot have been severely damaged. There are two balconies that are pretty fragile right now. And then, of course, the upper roof. I mean, it's not, when you think about, you know, a roof, it's just not that, you know, intriguing, but you know what? You got to have your envelope sealed up. And then even the smaller dome, we finished the massive, the big dome in August. That was completely re-engineered internally. So everybody looks at the outside and you don't really, you know, it's like, well, it looks fine. You know, it's kind of like your bones have cancer, you know.
But the real excitement is that the treatments are appearing to be successful. And the only challenge is the envelope inside which you have to reimagine the Barnum Museum of the 21st century and beyond, which, according to some literature that you revealed to me a few minutes before we started talking, looks pretty darned exciting. I mean, and it's funny because I mentioned that it looks like something that, you know, modern-day Disney-esque Imagineers would have thought of in terms of of the concepts, and your response to me was, well, yes, as a matter of fact, we have one of the original Disney Imagineers, right?
Yeah, it's when we realized we had to recreate a museum that would pay tribute to P.T. Barnum, that's a really tall order. I mean, he blazed the trail for the attractions industry globally, and he's recognized that way. So we started looking around at exhibition designers that could come in, and the idea, you know, of a traditional, you know, an object with a lid over it and some label copy, people don't connect with that anymore.
Well, this is not a tabletop exhibit experience.
It's not. Even though the artifacts are fantastic, people need more. It needs to speak to a story and storytelling. So we started looking for a designer that could actually accommodate that, and through P.T. Barnum becoming part of the Hall of Fame in the International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions. Mm. This is a global organization. I go down to accept this honor posthumously for Mr. Barnum, and there are 44,000 people at this conference, over 100 countries. I was blown away, and he was put into the Hall of Fame basically because he is the founder of the attractions industry, which includes major museums, small museums, Disney.
We need a whole other segment of the show just to tick off the list.
Yeah, exactly. So my research continued down there, and subsequently met a firm called BRC Imagination Arts out of California, but they're global, and they did they are the creators of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield, Illinois. If you've ever go through Springfield, Illinois, and people go, I mean, there is cornfields there. It's a destination. It is one of the most powerful immersive experiences I've had, and I know the story. I know that, you know, I'm the historian. I know Lincoln's story, and I was actually moved to tears because they found it wasn't just about battlefields and statistics. It was humanizing Lincoln and his family and his children. And I was like, that's it. This is who needs to tell Barnum's story. Yeah. So we've been working with BRC Imagination Arts, and Bob Rogers, who's the principal owner, is – in fact, one of the founding Imagineers for Epcot Center. And he was actually on the board of governors of the Academy Awards because he's been nominated for Oscars. So he was one of the people called in the emergency meeting when they announced the wrong movie a couple of years ago. So he's a significant influencer for me, inspires me on. Was one of the first people to email me when he heard that the Barnum and we won the leadership award. So we're grateful to them.
Fantastic. Well, we are absolutely going to have to visit with you a lot more frequently, I think, in the coming couple of years as this whole new age of the Barnum Museum forms and is completed. But there's a couple other quick, exciting things that we want to talk about. We already heard about it a little bit in our great preview to the Barnum Festival, which is probably ongoing as this program broadcasts. But another one of Connecticut's more recent treasures, Javier Colon, is leading a fabulous cast of the musical Barnum at the Fairfield Center stage, and that is coming up. Tell me how that is tied to the Barnum Museum.
Oh, well, you know, it's wonderful. Well, Christine Brown, who used to run the Bijou Theater downtown, good friends with her, and we collaborated with Christine and the Bijou many times with the Jenny Lind Coloratura Soprano Concerts. And it was a glorious place to welcome the Swedish, you know, Jenny Lind scholar. Yeah. So when Christine became involved with bringing the play Barnum with Center Stage and the Barnum Festival, she immediately called. She was like, we need the Barnum connection. We need the, you know, how can the Barnum, you know, museum participate? It's like, oh, my gosh, of course, you know, anything for her. So a couple of nights ago, we had the entire cast here to do the first run-through of the play, which is typical. So it was about 50, you know, of the kids, and Javier came, who's loved lovely, and the performers, and I had the joy of really hearing the first raw run through. And boy, they sounded like they were nailed down already. I mean, the level of talent is extraordinary. Yeah. Please do not miss this. You have the opportunity. We're just putting it up on our website so you can click through and get tickets and VIP tickets they have. Yes, but it's going to be in Fairfield. Good. They're doing it. So it's great fun. And I think one night I'm going to do a talk back.
Oh, good.
You know, yeah. So it'll be it's a joy already. So.
Well, anyone who's listening to the program, whether it's live on the broadcast or on one of our podcasts or on iTunes, wherever they may be, can go to barnum-museum.org and follow the story, get all the updates, learn about opportunities to visit or to see artifacts as this transformation continues here in Bridgeport with the Barnum Museum. We're so pleased to have been invited in by Kathy Marr, who has been doing such an incredible job both leading up to and certainly post-incident of the tragedy that nearly but did not take down the museum. The Barnum Museum really stands as a great American national treasure and a unique physical testament to P.T. Barnum's life. July 5th of this year would have been his 209th birthday, and darn it, he really wanted to see that birthday.
I know, right? So
we just want to remind you that as the Barnum Museum looks ahead to a re-envisioned future as a true 21st century museum and a fitting tribute to its founder, I know both Kathy and our award-winning For the People will be there to chronicle it. And until next time, Kathy, thank you for having us here at sort of ground zero of the greatest show on earth. So thanks.
That's it. Thank you so much. It's always wonderful to have you here.
Well, a whole year and month ago when I first heard about the Zero Waste Fair, I met Sustain.com founder Annalise Pake. She was a guest on the program, and now we see her in all her personal glory here at this year's Zero Waste Fair. And she's got a lot of exciting things to talk about. Before we talk about this Envest Asset Management's Earth, Wine, and Finance Women-Only Networking and Sustainability event, take a breath. We'll talk to you. What's going on? It's been a year. How's Sustain.com doing?
We're growing really rapidly. We have over 50 members now. So these are businesses who make sustainable products and services. I think everyone is really aware that we have a major, major problem now, not only with climate change, but with our waste. So with this Zero Waste Fair in particular is really resonating with people. So today, 15 of our members that are dedicated to zero waste are here. Everything from food scrap recycling to textile recycling to zero waste packaging for wrapping gifts or your chocolate products, net zero homes, home energy audits, getting the gas off your grass, driving electric vehicles. These are all wonderful things that we can do to go zero waste. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people are kind of confused about how some things work. The reason why we do these events is so people can come and talk to the businesses and talk to the owners and understand firsthand why it's so important to drive an electric vehicle, for example. It's because 40% of our greenhouse gas emissions come from burning fossil fuels.
Right. Or at least get up on the knowledge about it for when you're ready to go electric.
That's exactly right. And I think a lot of people, so a lot of people are worried about charging. You can do a charger at home as well as public charging stations. Mm-hmm. A lot of businesses are installing charging stations as well. And the newer cars have more and more range on them. Mm-hmm. So that whole range anxiety issue is becoming a non-issue.
It's only going to get better if you wait another year or two. The range will probably even be better. There'll probably be a lot more innovation in terms of ways to tap those electric vehicles into the homes, charging systems and such.
Yeah, there's a big growth in smart homes and connected homes and connecting them to your cars. We're now seeing homes that have solar panels on the roof that also have Tesla power walls. to store the excess energy so you can literally become your own utility.
Yeah.
It's starting to happen. We have two homes in Westport that have it installed.
Go try and install a gasoline refinery in your garage and see how fast the zoning officer shows up.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. The technology is changing at an incredible pace, and we need it to. I mean, that's the really good news. But there are some things that we can do that are just so incredibly low tech. Use less, buy less, waste less. Upcycle, recycle, repurpose.
Get a push mower
or hire Mo Green to do your lawn with their electric battery-powered mowers, weed whackers, etc., that are charged using solar power.
And have no emissions.
No emissions.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I'm getting it.
Yeah. So, you know, here's the good news. The good news is that if you want to live this lifestyle, you can. You can kind of pick off what you want.
How far flung are your partners in terms of are they all sort of bullseyed around Fairfield County?
So most of our members are from Fairfield County and from Connecticut. We do have one of our members here today, Bay State Textiles. Mm-hmm. We do not have a company in Connecticut that recycles textiles.
Right. Yes.
What we do have is many businesses that will take used clothing, as well as clothing that's not wearable. Yep. So people need to understand that your favorite donation center will take just about everything. But this company partners with schools so that the schools can make $100 a ton in rebates from collecting it themselves instead of giving it away. So if you want to give away what's wearable to the Goodwill or the other nonprofit and anything else that's not wearable, they will take it and keep it out of the waste stream.
Right, and that's great because it maximizes the best quality resellable to the consumers in that department, and then provides that area where someone might sadly be inclined to maybe mix a few of the unwearable things in the bag that they dump in the bin or the dispenser or turn over in a big, huge bag.
Yeah, and ultimately that item would probably wind up, it could be tossed, but it could also wind up with Bay States ultimately. But they could be making money off of that.
Right.
So we're looking at this waste crisis now where our contaminated recycling doesn't have value anymore. And just in Fairfield alone, the town would make $25 a ton. It's going to cost $75 a ton come July 1. This is really horrendous news. So if you know that your food still has value, divert that from the waste stream, get curbside compost to pick it up.
Mm.
Or if your town is doing, like Darianne is in the middle of doing a pilot program where you can take your food scraps to the town transfer station and curbside compost will take them to have them composted. And that's growing.
And on the flip side of that, we're hearing so much and learning so much and seeing so much attention on the web and in newspapers and in the media being paid to making more family food out of what used to go in the trash, using those carrot ends and, you know, in many, many thousands of other cultures, they look at what we're throwing out and see weeks worth of meals.
Yeah, and that's just part of our culture that has to change. I mean, we're all now so much more conscious about what we buy and what we waste, whether it's how things are packaged or whether we're not eating the stem on the broccoli, for example, which is entirely edible.
Yep.
Just peel it.
Good for you, kids.
Oh, it's delicious. You can make broccoli slaw out of it.
Right.
Peel the stem and just grate it, and you have a broccoli slaw. It's delicious. So, yeah, it's buy less, waste less.
Reach way back into the darkness of your kitchen cabinet and get that slaw maker that you bought off TV a few years ago, right?
Oh, absolutely. All those gadgets, that's what they're for. They're for the hard-to-eat things.
There you go.
Yeah.
Super. Well, we can't leave without talking about this women-only event. It happens to feature at least a single gentleman. So this is the Envest Asset Management Earth, Wine, and Finance event. Tell me about it.
So this event is on Thursday, April 11th at a co-working facility in Stanford called Serendipity Labs. And the panel discussion is with women.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm one of the panelists, and we're going to be opening up conversation about sustainability in general, including sustainable investing. And this is really meant to be very empowering for women. Finance is not naturally an area where women get involved, but more and more we are. Mm-hmm. And this is really to help people understand that maybe it's time to take a look at your portfolio and see how you're invested. Maybe you want to shift gears and just make sure your investments are aligned with your values, and also you're not taking undue risks, because we know that pension funds are divesting of their investments in fossil fuel companies, and they're also being sued. So it's becoming a liability. You want to make sure that you don't have risky stuff in your portfolio. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yep.
So, and the benefits, $20 per person. We are serving clean, crafted wine. So this is wine that's been tested in a lab for additives and pesticides at UC Davis. And they're delicious. And, benefits Sierra Club of Connecticut.
It's like my neighbor Luigi used to make in the yard in my neighborhood, the wine. Nothing but grapes and grapes.
Grapes and sun, hopefully.
Right? Yep. So it's a $20 per person in advance.
Right.
And proceeds benefit the Sierra Club of Connecticut, who we were just chatting with a few weeks ago at Organicon. So you need to go to sustain.com.
Right.
Their founder, Annalise Paik, has been kind enough to spend a few minutes with us here at the 2019 Zero Waste Fair for Wilton Go Green. And that is sustain.com, sustaine.com. Annalise, great to chat with you.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure, John.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofits, community groups, and grassroots organizations that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media and our partners. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The New Haven Free Public Library and Read to Grow have formed a partnership to put library cards into the hands of new parents throughout the city. Read to Grow distributes these new library cards and accompanying bilingual postcards explaining easy ways to use them for expecting parents. Each library card is valid for at least 1 year and offers access to online resources at the New Haven Free Public Library, including ebooks, music, and videos. Each postcard includes the 5 New Haven Free Public Library locations and contact information, along with encouragement for adults to visit a library branch and upgrade their cards to full service. For details on this and other Read to Grow programs and volunteer opportunities across Connecticut, just visit readtogrow.org.
Well, let's talk about green architecture. We're here at the Zero Waste Fair, Wilton Go Green. And she is with Trillium Architects, or maybe you are the Trillium Architect.
I own Trillium Architects, and I started this company about 15 years ago to concentrate on super sustainable homes. And we pretty much look at making a house really energy efficient and also very healthy. We work on both new homes and home renovations, and our first goal is really to make the building envelope very insulated and well air sealed, so you don't get a lot of mold and moisture in the walls, and you also save a ton of energy. And then we look at materials that are going into the house and air systems to make the indoor air quality as healthy as possible. And we also look at air, you know, how the house works, its flow, and what size the house is. We encourage people to build right size houses so they're not these huge behemoths that you don't use any of the rooms. So we really concentrate on making smaller, super efficient homes.
Well, in this neck of the woods in the Northeast, there are so many homes with good bones, but they're old, good big hole, good bones, big holes.
Yes.
And I know probably even as little as 5 years ago, it was really kind of like walking that tightrope in terms of the cost to retrofit versus just selling it to the next person, let them do what they will and build new, because then we could build the airtight, smaller box. So, a lot's happened in the past 5 years or so in terms of cost to retrofit, right?
Yes. So we and of course, saving an existing structure is one of the best things you can do. So in this model I have here, we're showing how we take an existing house and wrap it with new exterior insulation and siding. So if you're thinking about residing or re-roofing your house, it's a perfect opportunity. We can just come and wrap your house in a blanket, basically, of insulation. and greatly improve your energy efficiency. And then the load, the energy load inside to heat and cool is tremendously reduced. So we can really work with existing structures in a much more cost-effective way now.
And does that sometimes also offset the need to either upgrade or replace heating and cooling systems sooner, or
in
some cases at all?
It could, because a lot of people around here have oil-based systems, which are real energy hogs. But if you just fix your building envelope, you'll go from spending, say, $400 a month in the heating season to maybe $200 a month. It's easy to get that kind of result.
How about in terms of putting the IT and, the infrastructure in place where you can make it a smart home even though it's an old home?
Yeah, that's fairly easy, especially with all the wireless technology we have now. And if you are upgrading your heating and cooling system, that's very easy to incorporate. Even with thermostats, you can use your old heating and cooling system. But that is definitely the rage right now.
So in terms of the consideration to purchase a new home versus trying to retrofit, not just because it's too costly or complicated, but because the kids are gone and it's time, we've got that lot out in another place, so let's go and do it. What are the cutting edge things that are happening in the world of architecture today that are really making the difference with new home building?
Yeah, a lot of what we're doing today are net zero homes and what are called passive house homes. Passive house homes are houses that use almost no energy to heat and cool them. They're so well insulated and they're sited to face the sun, so they collect the solar heat gain during the day. And we really can make a house so low load for energy use. It's incredible. So if you are starting new, you can make these smaller homes that use almost no heating and cooling. And then we're putting solar panels on top so that they're net zero and takes a load off the grid. And you don't need to use any fossil fuels. And basically, people who live in these houses spend about $18 a month on all of their electricity, heating and cooling, refrigerator, water, everything. And that $18 a month is only the fee you have to pay to hook up to the electric grid. Otherwise, everything's free. So it's really quite amazing what we can do.
Talk a little bit more about solar, because over the past few years on the radio, we're hearing, Chinese solar panels, tariffs, issues like that. What's cooking right now with solar and the solar panels you need to make the system go?
Well, solar panels are always getting better. They've greatly improved. Every year they get better and better and more amazing. And as you might have heard, solar shingles are coming. They're not quite here yet, but they're definitely on their way. It's all about efficiency levels. Right now there are still rebates for solar, but they probably will go away next year, although you never know, and it depends on the president and all that sort of thing. But right now solar is relatively cheap, and people really look at maybe a 5 to 7 year payback if they put solar on their house. And it definitely works in Connecticut, depending on your lot, of course. It's very much worth it.
And as solar gets more efficient, it kind of keeps pace with the shrinking footprint of the roof on the smaller house?
Yeah, actually it does, yeah. And some people are doing ground mount, but basically we try really hard to keep the roof simple and a long roof facing the sun, so we optimize the amount of real estate for solar panels on the house roof.
Yeah. Is the optimal situation for solar-assisted heating still through panels?
It is. Basically, if you get all of your heating and cooling onto the electric grid and then put solar up, that is really kind of the best way, because in the future, we hope to phase out oil and natural gas as our fuel sources. Mm. And if we go to electric, then we can use only alternative fuels, eventually solar and wind and water, hydropower, to fuel the grid. Mm. And that is where we're trying to head, so that everything can function off the grid, basically.
So am I hearing you correctly in that the optimal situation in the future where you're utilizing solar power, that's going to produce the electricity that's going to heat the water, not a water panel on the roof?
Yeah. You can really go either way, but even right now it's more efficient to use the electric photovoltaic panel to heat your water than it is the old school solar water panels.
Great.
Yeah.
And you said the solar shingles are sort of still out there on the horizon.
Yeah.
What else, if you were to pick the most oddball beta tested thing in your in the latest issue of your favorite architect journal, what has potential out there that may have literally seemed science fiction 2 years ago, never mind 20?
I'll have to think about that for a sec, but basically smart technology, solar shingles, rooftop wind for residential houses. That's cool. They even have these very cool ridge vents that are wind generating power for the house. We're veering away from foam insulation actually and using these more natural foams because it makes the house breathe in a different way, which is boring but more interesting to us. And of course battery storage for, you know, a lot of people have electric vehicles and battery storage become a part.
Getting a little hookup station.
Yeah, so that's becoming a big thing too.
Super.
Yeah.
Anything else that person who might be weighing that decision to make an investment in energy savings needs to know?
Well, basically, in our world, we don't really think there's a huge extra cost in building green because when we make we're spending a lot more money in making the envelope of the house more awesome, but that greatly reduces your HVAC equipment, and HVAC equipment is more expensive than insulation. So to us, it's kind of a wash, that cost. So we, in our industry, we don't think of it as more expensive.
And for the consumers?
It's really not. I mean, maybe it's a little bit more. Maybe it's a few-year payback, but it's very minimal, if it's anything.
Excellent. Great information. Learned a lot. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much,
Elizabeth DeSalvo is with Trillium Architects here in Wilton.
We're in Ridgefield, actually, work all over Fairfield and Westchester County and Litchfield County.
Great. Great to meet you. How do people find you?
On our website at trilliumarchitects.com.
Fantastic. Elizabeth DeSalvo here from the Zero Waste Fair, Wilton Go Green at the Wilton Fieldhouse. Thanks, Elizabeth. Great.
Thank you so much, John.
Sit up for me, Corey. All right, we just met Corey Siakuri. She is with Bay State Textiles out of Massachusetts, but they're here today, Wilton Go Green's Zero Waste Fair, because they are the anointed textile recycling end of this whole day, and really, really important because I guess when you throw like the old T-shirt in the garbage can, it stays in the landfill for like, you know, centuries, right?
Yeah. It is a huge problem. The average person gets rid of 81 pounds of textiles per year, and only 15% of that is being recycled, and the rest is going into our landfills.
And there's a lot of cool things that are being done now on the back end of this once you get all the clothes together, right? And all the materials together that wasn't really happening even 5 or 10 years ago. What's going on once the person does attempt to and deliver their textiles to be recycled through an organization like Bay State?
So we collect everything we collect. It is shipped overseas. And anything that can be reused again as clothing goes to developing countries. And it's sold there for very, very cheap because the people there obviously cannot afford new clothing. And anything that cannot be reused as clothing is broken down into fibers and made into things like insulation for houses or car seats. Or it is ripped up into wiping rags for industrial use.
I'm looking at unbelievable statistics here, and this is the one that's getting me. I never realized how much of what people just say, that's no good anymore, just toss it in the trash. Almost everything.
Yeah. We have a use for everything. 95% of textiles, they can be torn or stained. They can still be recycled.
Very good. So tell me more about Bay State Textiles. Did I hear you guys do some sort of co-op with schools or something?
Yeah, we love to work with the schools. We like to go in and teach the kids about recycling, why it's important. And we actually have a rebate program. When we put a box out of school, we give back $100 for every ton that they collect.
And it's those tons add up pretty quick in a big school.
Yeah, they do.
So how did you get involved in this? Are you interested in environmental or in sustainability? What's your involvement with the company?
So my father has actually been doing this for like 30 years, and I just love the idea of it, of helping the planet, so I got involved.
And what else do folks need to know? Because spring cleaning time is coming. Here we are, first weekend of spring. People are going to be going through their closets, maybe you know, making holding up some of those fashions or items that they're wondering about getting rid of. What should people do when they have that pile bag or a minivan full of clothes that have kind of gotten paired off of what's going to be worn this year?
So we like to say we take the good, the bad, and the ugly. So we will take anything. You just have to find a donation box and throw it in.
Do you guys do, aside from partnering with schools, do you provide collection donations that also benefit other nonprofits?
We have worked with other nonprofits before. We like to work with municipalities, so we are in recycling centers. We're at some town churches, mostly schools.
And so you guys are based up in Pembroke, Massachusetts, but here you are in Wilton, Connecticut. How far flung is your partnerships with the system?
So we are just in Massachusetts and Connecticut right now. We do have sort of like a sister company in Puerto Rico.
What's it called?
It's called PR Textile Recycling.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Does the same thing?
Yeah, we do the same thing there.
Good. So if somebody's listening and they're with a school and they want to host some sort of a textile or clothing recycling fundraiser, how do they get in touch with you?
So you can contact us through our website, baystatetextiles.com, and someone will be in touch with you. And we would love to organize a program for any school in Connecticut.
Excellent. Corey Siapuri is in the family business. Bay State Textiles out of Pembroke, Massachusetts. As we heard, they are one of the only, if not the only, out-of-state party here exhibiting today at the Zero Waste Fair for Wilt and Go Green. So, Corey, great to meet you, and best of luck. This is certainly a situation that doesn't lack for product to throw at it.
Yes.
Or throw out of it.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we may have to bow out from our conversation with Heather Priest every once in a while as her hungry customers come up and look here. Heather almost slapped my hand when I went to throw away this pile of food scraps that was sitting on her right in the middle of her table till I looked up and saw that she's cooking with food scraps. So, Heather, welcome to the Zero Waste Fair. This is something that I'm hearing about everywhere. But, you know, my grandmother, God bless her, a Lithuanian caterer, she would come home with bushel baskets and big burlap bags full of stuff. And when it was all said and done, there was maybe like one little bucket of scraps at the end.
Right, it's possible.
But that is not the way we have been inclined to go here in America.
Yeah, we've basically evolved to waste a lot of food. And there are so many different things you can do with the food that's left over, whether it's a peel, the stem, leftover grains, leftover bread. All of that can be repurposed, and it can make some really amazing things.
So walk us through the basics of what folks need to know when they have the ingredients that they're going to use in the moment, kind of separated off to the left of the cutting board, and everything else that normally they just toss in the garbage on the right. Virtually everything in that toss in the garbage pile can can be reused?
Yeah, most of it can be reused. If you have a freezer, put it in the freezer. The food processor is your best friend. So anything that you probably wouldn't have used, like the stem of a mint or a cilantro plant, or even like your leftover hamburger buns. Mm-hmm. If you have those things and you can put them in the food processor, you can make breadcrumbs with the hamburger buns. You can make an herb spread with butter, mix it with butter, and you can have a delicious cream cheese or herb spread with your stems of your mint. If you have the peels of potatoes, you can make little potato chips out of the peels of your potatoes. There's so many things that you can do with scraps.
Great. Well, what are you making here today for the folks sampling at the Zero Waste Fair?
So I have a mixed grain Asian, like a little patty. Mm-hmm. So it's quinoa, wild rice, and brown rice. And then it's a mixture of cilantro stems, mint stems, the ends of Napa cabbage, the ends of some onions, garlic and ginger, all pureed in the food processor. I mix that little green mixture with my grains, some bread and egg crumbs, breadcrumbs and egg, and then I sear it in a pan. And I put a little sriracha mayo on top, just add a little love. And then I'm also made a broccoli salad with celery, currants, sunflower seeds. But I made the dressing out of the broccoli stems. So I cooked the broccoli stems until they were nice and soft with some garlic and onion. And then pureed that with olive oil, vinegar, Dijon mustard. So it almost makes like a green goddess feel. Mm. But you don't have any mayo. It's totally vegan.
Well, I'll tell you, I had one of the rice and quinoa flats there, the sliders, if you will, and I'm getting a really interesting kind of aftertaste. It's a treat that keeps on giving.
Yes, that's the ginger.
Great.
That's the ginger.
So, what advice would you give to folks who want to get started in terms of doing more with what they already have?
Honestly, the internet is your best friend. There's a ton of different clips on YouTube. There's a lot of different recipe books out there. You just have to be willing to take the time and make the space in your freezer and start to get creative, and you're going to save some money in the process.
How did you get into it?
Well, I started out as a chef, and then I became a teacher. I teach culinary arts and gardening now, and just teaching cooking and seeing the amount of waste of the students and what they were throwing away every day really started to break my heart. So I wanted to find ways that we could use all the pieces of our food and not waste them.
I am happily discovering that a lot of food service establishments are getting on the bandwagon with that too, which is, you know, when you think of the amount of food scraps that an average home and a family of four could produce, boy, you know, bring in the aircraft carrier to load what they have for the restaurants, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, the restaurants are producing thousands of pounds of food waste. Connecticut actually recently passed a law, I believe. I don't think it's being enforced yet. But if you produce more than 2,000 pounds of food waste a week, you should be composting. And that's the first step. But what I really would love to see is them get really creative with their menus.
And because on the other hand, folks are receptive to it now. This has long become a thing, and it seems like this is one area where maybe you know, the industry isn't catching up with the practices of the very demographic they're serving.
Yeah, I think that the general public, if they push it with their local restaurants and start asking for it, the market will come. Hmm. It's just a matter of time.
Where do you teach?
I teach at Middlebrook School in Wilton, Culinary Arts and Gardening.
Very good. Well, thanks for talking to us a little bit today about how we can take the stuff we normally might throw out and make another meal or two out of it. Heather Priest is cooking with scraps here today at the Zero Waste Fair at Wilton Go Green's annual event. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.